We are holding on Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, 5 lines from the bottom. All right, still talking about this case where you shecht an animal and find an unborn baby inside it, the various dinim about when you're allowed to eat it, when you're not allowed to eat it, the last thing we talked about, the chaylev of it. So, Amud Abami, Hashechet is a trefa. Suppose that the mother animal is a trefa. Now, we've learned before, a trefa is not able to bear young, but that's if it became a trefa already, if it became a trefa after it was pregnant, then it will be able to still carry the baby. Mm-hmm. So you shecht an animal which is itself trefa, umasaba ben teschai, then you find inside it a baby that's after 9 months pregnancy, that the baby is alive. So now the question is, what would be the din of that baby? So l'divrei ha'oyser matir, l'divrei ha'matir oyser. What will come out is like this. According to the mayor, who says in our Mishnah that normally when you find a 9-month baby inside the womb, then it's also to eat by itself. You have to shecht it. In this case,
because it's independent.
Because it's independent already of the mother, right? Over here, he will hold that this one is mutter when you shecht it, that this one, you can shecht it and you'll be mutter to eat it.
Because it's a trefa.
Because even though the mother was a trefa, the shechita of the mother has no effect on the baby anyway. Therefore, the baby is not considered a trefa along with the mother, and therefore you can shecht it and eat it like normal. On the other hand, the divrei hamaser, according to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, who say, or the chachamim, whatever, who say that you don't have to shecht the baby, in this case, it would be osur, because given that it itself doesn't require shechita, it itself you could kill any old way and eat it. So it amounts to, therefore, that it was, it was supposed to become mutter with its mother's shchita, but if it became mutter with its mother's shchita, its mother was a trefa. Therefore, it itself is also to eat as well, because it's like a limb of her body.
So the baby is a trefa because the mother is
not, not so much the baby is a trefa per se, but you can't say that I'm going to shecht the baby, and that way I'll be able to eat it, because the baby itself doesn't require shchita. The baby itself was supposed to be mutter with the shchita of the mother. In this case, the mother can't be eaten because she's a trefa. Well, she could be shechted. It's just okay. So you actually have, now that you mentioned that, there is an explanation from Reb Chaim Brisker that says that when you shecht a trefa, that the shechita itself is lacking something, and therefore, in a certain sense, it's not a full shechita. So if you take that, then what we're saying over here is fairly straightforward. It's like you didn't have a full shechita, and therefore, yeah. But even without that though, the point is that you shechted the mother, she's a trefa, you can't eat her. Therefore, if the baby is considered an aver of the mother, that's why the baby becomes mutter when you shecht the mother. Well, over here, if it's an aver of the mother, then the mother is a trefa, and therefore you can't eat the baby.
It's a trefa, then.
Again, it's not so much that the baby itself is separately a trefa, but it's part of a trefa, therefore. Yeah. Okay, that's the point of Rabasi. Rava Omar, no, the divrei hamatir nami mutter. No, even the opinion that says that it's mutter to eat the baby without shechting it, the ben tkura, no, even that opinion would say in this case the baby is mutter, because dalad simon and achshav rachmana, because the svara that we said before, that when it comes to a ben tkura, the Torah is giving you effectively 4 simonim that you could shecht in order to eat the baby. You could shecht the 2 simonim of the mother, and the baby is mutter, or you could shecht the 2 simonim of the baby, and then it's mutter by itself. So over here, what it is that you can't be matir using the shechita of the mother, because the mother herself is a trefa, but you still have the other 2 simonim available of the baby itself to shecht, therefore you can shecht them, and you're good.
Therefore,
when you shecht the baby, so when you take the baby out of the womb and shecht it, then you're good. Okay. Omer of Chista, Hashoichet is a trefa or Motzaba ben Teschai. If you shecht a, again, same case, if you shecht a trefa animal and you find that a baby of 9 months, so after a 9-month pregnancy that's alive, Toon Shchita, that baby requires Shchita, which seems to be like the mayor of our Mishnah, so we're going to discuss that. It is also when you shecht it, you have to give the foreleg and the cheeks and the stomach to the kohen, like you have to do with any regular chulin animal that you shecht, which we'll learn in the next to last parak of our masechta. We'll talk about those dinim. The imes not the next to last parak, but whatever. One of the last parakim is going to be one of the last parakim of our masechta. The 10th parak rather is going to be on the dinim of zroi l'chayayim b'keva. The imes torah melatami b'masta. And another din, if this baby dies without shechita, then it's torah from tumas nevela, because the having shechted the mother makes it that it doesn't have tumas nevela. That's what Rav Chista is telling us. Omalei Rava. So Rava. So again, so the, you found the 9-month baby in the womb. It needs shechita, which seems to be like a mayor. You have to take zroel chayim the keva from it, which also sounds like a mayor because it sounds like it's a full-fledged shechita. Therefore, you need to give those parts to the kohen as you usually would. But we're saying, but if it dies without shechita, then it doesn't have tumas nevela because the shechita of the mother covered it. Now, why would that be? Amalei Rava, so Rava asked him on the side over here. It says maybe it should be Rava. So who is this? Who are you saying? Like ton shechita kaman kara meir. You're telling me that it requires shechita. That part seems to be like a meir. Because according to the Chachamim, you don't need to shecht it. Because the mother is shechita, everybody should have covered it. The imes torah milatam b'masa kaman kara banan. On the other hand, the part that you're saying that if it dies without shechita, that it's not matam it shumas nevela. That part seems to be like a rabbanon. So what's going on over here? By the way, Rashi makes a point of saying that the girsa we should have over here is indeed, as we have it in the Gemara, in front of us, a shechet as a treva. You have some Rishonim actually who bring a girsa that Rosh Chista was actually saying a shechet as a behema. In which case it's not even necessarily when the mother was a treva.
Oh, yes.
No, it's not so obvious. No, because
shechet as a behema. So.
Shechet as a behema. In other words, the girsa we have in front of us is specifically the mother is a treva and therefore the baby requires shechita, which would be now. One second. We just said that Rava had said that. That both opinions in our Mishnah, both Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, whatever they hold about the 9-month baby when the mother was shechted, whether you need to check the 9-month baby separately or not, they would both agree, says Rabbah, that if the mother was a shefer, that the mother does not require shechita. So now the Chista is saying, though, that you do require shechita of the baby in order to be matured. So first of all, not like Rav Asi who had said, Rav Asi had said that Rav Meir would agree with that. Rav Asi had said Rav Yehuda would say there's nothing you can do with it. You can't shecht the baby because the mother was a shefer, right. So therefore, Rav Asi had said, Rav Yehuda, who normally holds that the shechita of the mother helps for the baby, would hold in this case the baby is effectively treifa also. Rava had argued with that. Now Rav Chista is telling us that if you shecht the treifa, then the baby is chayiv, it needs shechita, is chayiv mzroi l'chayayim v'keva, but it's not matame v'masa. So that's Rava is asking. Rava is asking him, who is this like? Part of what you're saying seems to be like Rav Meir, part of it seems to be like the Chachamim. So the Chachamim hold that when you shech the mother, then it covers the baby, and presumably, yeah, we said even not presumably, we know for a fact, even if the mother is a treifa, we know that that's so because they say the shechita of the, even though the mother is a treifa, and therefore you're not going to be able to eat her, nevertheless the shechita of her helps as far as being as taking away tumas nevela from the baby. They said that even as far as the limb sticking out, how much more so the part that's still inside the womb. So if Rav Chista is telling us that it's not a nevela, that part seems to be like the Rabbanan, but the first part, that it requires shechita, seems to be like a meir. So he answers, v'litai meich, so according to your own svara that you're asking the question, ha detani Rav Chiya, this is Rav Chista answering, what about what Rav Chiya teaches in a braisa? Rav Chista's statement definitely was a shechita patreit. But the braisa that he's going to quote, there you have different gifts. Okay, the gifts that we have in front of us is that he's quoting exactly the same thing. Hashurchet is from a braisa. Hashurchet is a treifa or matzah ben teschai, ton shechita. That if you shech the treifa and you find it in a 9-month baby that's alive, that baby requires shechita. It's chayev in zroi l'chayayim b'keva. The imes torah milatame b'masa. And if it dies and it's not matame tumas nevela, so you could ask the same
thing.
B'keva, that you have to give the three parts to the kohen like a regular shechita. Yeah. But that's not matame b'masa, meaning it doesn't have tumas nevela. So again, you could ask the same question on the braisa. Keman kera meir v'imet torah milatame b'masa kera banan. So you could ask, why are you asking the question on me? You should be asking it on the braisa. Now, Tosfos brings up, in that case, if Rav Chista knew the braisa to begin with, why is he even saying something in his own name? Why is he not to begin with saying a braisa? Or why is he first saying it as if it's an independent statement, and then when Rava or Rabba challenges him on it, then he says, well, what are you going to do with the braisa? So Tosfos asks that as a question. So here's where you have a few answers. One of them is indeed that the Rashba and some other Rishonim have a girsa over here that the Braisa actually says Hashochet as a behema, in which case it's not exactly the same thing as Rav Chista is saying. So therefore he can be saying his own statement when it was a Terefa, and the Braisa can be saying more generally when it was a kosher animal, meaning not necessarily when it was Terefa. You have a number of other answers as well, including maybe Rava. If we say that it's Rava challenging Rav Chista over here, maybe in fact Rava only said his statement later after Rav Chista's, We had it in the Gemara before, because that's the order of the discussion in the Gemara. But maybe actually what happened was Rav Chista said his din first, and then based on the discussion over here, then Rava came up with his din. But there's that. There's a few other possibilities anyway. Okay. So, the point is, you have the same problem with the Braisa. The answer is Holakasha. That's not such a problem, because Rav Chiya in Kvam Mase Mes Kama. Because Rav Chiya in his Braisa is not necessarily talking about when he says at the end, if it dies. He doesn't mean if it dies after the mother was shechted. He means if you found it already dead in the womb. Then we're saying, so then the whole thing, in other words, you shechted the mother, which was, in other words, Rav Chiya in his, the Braisa, which is part of Tosefta, so therefore it's one of the Braisas that was taught by Rav Chiya, can be talking about a case where you shechted the mother, you shechted Ashechetas HaTrefa, the way we have the Gersa, or Ashechetas HaBehema, as the Rashba has the Gersa, you found it in a Ben Tes Chai. But not, so if you found that a Ben Tes Chai, then it needs Shchita, and it's Chai, and Zoray L'Chayayim B'Keva, good, that's all according to the mayor. And if, on the other hand, instead of finding it alive, the immense, if you found it in the womb dead, then it's not Matana Tumas Nebela.
That's according.
So that would be, that could all work, that could all work according to the mayor. Because Rav Meir, when he says that the 9-month baby requires Shchita, that's talking about when the baby is alive. When the baby is dead in the womb, he agrees that the shechita seimim at the harter, that it's not considered independent enough that it should be considered nevela. It's not. He says that the shechita of the mother is mataharet. In this case, where the mother is a trefa, he would say, okay, you can't eat the mother, you can't eat the baby either, but nevertheless, too much nevela, it doesn't happen. So the braisa can be explained that way. So that's Rava is answering that Holy Kasha. That's, I don't have a problem with the Braisa because Rav Chiya Imkran Mase Meskama, because Rav Chiya may well be talking about where you found the baby already dead in the womb. Elodi Doch Kasha, but according to you, it's a Kasha. Meaning, in other words, either the problem is that in your case you're talking you shechted a trefa, and the Braisa is talking about where you shechted a regular non-trefa animal, or another possibility, which some of the Mefarshim bring up. I think, for example, Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings this up, is we have a general rule, a Tana in a Mishnah or a Braisa doesn't always have to spell out everything. They can say something and leave it for the Amoraim to explain. The Amoraim, given that after the time of the Amoraim, that's it. You know, from then on, we have, you know, everything that's been transmitted to us, the Torah Shabbat Peh, we have, but we can't darish in new things and come up with new halachas of our own. So then in that case, the Amoraim are expected to explain what they're saying more clearly. So the Braisa can be using a word, the immes term, la tamme ramasa, and we're expected to understand that it means that if you found it dead in the womb. But you, Rav Chista, being an Amora, you should be clarifying. Don't just say the immes, which could be mistakenly understood to mean if it was born, if it was found alive in the womb and died later on. Say the immasse mes or something. So the question is still on you. Amale, so Rav Chista answers, l'diginami l'kasha. No, there's no problem on me also, because saying that the Braisa could actually be talking about where it died afterwards. Because again, Dalad Simonim Akshar Be'rachmana, because again, when you find an unborn baby in the womb, you have effectively 4 Simonim, 2 out of 4 Simonim that can be shechted to be masterate, either the mother's 2 Simonim or the baby's 2 Simonim. So therefore, we don't have to say that any part of the Braisa is going like Rav Meir. Even the Chachamim will agree, as Rava himself just said before, that if the mother was a trefa, then you have the option of shechting the baby separately because it didn't become mutter for eating with the mother's trefa, seeing as how the mother was a trefa. And that's what we're talking about. So one second. So now we can explain what Rav Chista is saying. If the baby is found alive in the womb of a trefa, you have the option to shecht it, because like Rava said, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that nita b'shchitas imo, would agree in this case you have the option, instead of shechting it yourself, to avoid the trefa of the mother. And therefore, if you shecht it, it is a full-fledged trefa and it requires zroi l'chayayim b'keva. It is kosher, and you have to give the zroi l'chayayim b'keva to the kohen. On the other hand, this baby, if it dies afterwards, at some point after the mother was shechted, then the fact of the matter is, another way of looking at it is the baby did not require shechita, because you could have said, I'm going to be yotze with the mother's shechita, so therefore that's enough, fine, you can't eat it. If you take that view, then you can't eat it, because you didn't have its own shechita to be master it, and the mother's shechita was a trefa, but at least it takes away tumas nevela, because the shechita of the mother was enough to take that away. So therefore, Rav Chista's whole statement can go like the Chachamim without having to resort to the mayor. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The
according if it had to resort to a mayor?
If it had to resort to a mayor, then we would have to understand the imes to be, like Rava had just said, that it would mean if you found it dead in the womb. Because, as Rav Chisda is saying, that's not what I mean.
Okay.
He means even if it died, it was alive at the time when you shechted the mother. Later on it died, but that's fine, because nevertheless, at that point, you can say the shechita of the mother helped to take away Tumas Nemeinah.
Okay.
So the Gemara continues. Ki solik Rav Zeira, when Rav Zeira went up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechel Rav Asi, he found Rav Asi, the Yosef Ka'amalei Lahoshmaita, that Rav Asi was sitting and saying over this statement of Rav Chisda's, about that you shechted the treifa and you found a 9-month baby in it, etc. Amalei, so Rav Asi tells him, Yishar v'chein Amar Rav Yechanan. Very good. You said well. That's this idea that Dalad Simon and Kshedim Boy, that was the baby, you have a choice of shechting the mother or shechting the baby, and therefore that results in different dinim in different cases. V'chein Amar Rav Yechanan. And Rav Asi tells him, you should know Rav Yechanan said the same thing. So if you shecht the baby, then it has its own status and it needs zeroy l'chayayim l'keva. On the other hand, if you don't shecht it, if it dies, then at least it doesn't have tumas nevela because it was covered by its mother's shechita. Well, when it dies, it does have tumas nevela. The question is, the fact that Rav Asi has to say that Rav Yochanan said this, miklal de poligale Rav Shimon Lakish, does that imply that Rav Lakish argues with Rav Yochanan? The fact that Rav Asi had, otherwise, if Rav Asi just wanted to say very good, he would have said Yishar. Like Yashikoya. The fact that he has to add B'chein Omer Rav Yechanan implies it's not unanimous. We Chachamim and Eretz Yisrael don't unanimously hold that way. And who is it who usually argues with Rav Yechanan? Rish Lakish. So does that imply Rish Lakish argues with Rav Yechanan? The answer is not necessarily. Misha have a shohilei
b'shokit.
Usually, when you have anybody arguing on Rav Yechanan, among the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, it's usually Rish Lakish. Yeah.
Rish Lakish used to be a Ghana, right?
That's true. Okay. But that's neither here nor there for our purposes.
Right.
Okay. So the answer is Misha have a shohilei b'shokitle. The answer is that Rish Lakish, when Rav Yechanan used to say something in the Beis Medrash and Rish Lakish disagreed, Rish Lakish would not necessarily right away speak up then and voice his objection. He would wait until Rav Yechanan, he would wait a little while after Rav Yechanan said it to see maybe Rav Yechanan himself will realize, hey, I shouldn't have said that. What I just said was wrong, and retract it himself. So rather than having to challenge him in public, he would wait. In this case, what happened was Rav Asi, after Rav Yechanan had said the statement, he left the Beis Medrash. Rav Asi left the Beis Medrash. Therefore, he didn't know whether Rish Lakish ended up arguing with Rav Yechanan on it. Did Rav Yechanan? So he says, "V'chein Amar Rav Yechanan." In other words, I know for a fact Rav Yechanan said this. Whether Rish Lakish agrees, I have no idea. The Ikadami Mishta have a shasi, Mishasikle. Another version is not Mishta Shahi, that he was waiting, but Mishta have a shasi, that it happened that Rish Lakish was drinking a glass of water when Rav Yechanan said this, so therefore he didn't answer right away. And meanwhile, by the time he finished drinking, Rav Asi had left, and again, he didn't know what Rish Lakish had said. This isn't the only place in Shas we have this, by the way. We have this twice in Shavuot as well. So yeah, it happened.
Rav Asi was not as...
It means Rav Asi is one of the great Talmidim, but still he had to leave for whatever reason. It could be. I'm sure he must have had a valid reason. He's not going to stop and leave the Beis Medrash in the middle for no good reason.
No, he had a reason to leave, but not to
whatever
leave
it is. No, but he didn't. So therefore, he didn't know. So therefore, he didn't know whether Rish Lakish should answer or not. Okay. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Shazuri Yom Afilu V'Cholos. So we had three opinions in our Mishnah. We had Rav Meir who said that this baby, the 9-month baby, requires its own shechita. We had the Chachamim saying it doesn't. And we had Rav Shimon Shazuri saying that even if the baby, even if the former baby is now already 5 years old and is plowing in the field like any normal animal, nevertheless, you don't need shechita for it, shechita sinim mitaharetim. So the question is
going even further.
Well, that's the question. Hainu Tanakama. Isn't he effectively saying the same thing as the Tanakama? The Tanakama said that the baby is mutter with the mother's shechita. Rav Shimon Shazuri is saying the same thing. What is he adding?
Even after 5 years.
The answer, that's the answer. The argument between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Shazuri would be if the baby actually stepped on the ground. If the baby actually stepped on the ground, so and Rashi actually adds that it walked as well. So the Tanakama will say, fine, Midaraisa, you're right, this baby does not require shechita. Ever, even if it grows up. However, Midrabbanan, we're going to say that you have to shecht it, because otherwise it's very easily confused with a regular animal. Whereas Rav Shimon Shazuri is not concerned about that.
When you say it doesn't require shechita, that means you could.
It means you can kill it however you want. You can't eat a piece off it while it's alive. That would be Eva Menachai. But you can kill it however you want, which actually we'll talk about that soon.
It seems surprising that the Torah says that.
The Torah tells us you have to shecht an animal, but the Torah also gives exceptions, and this is an exception.
Where does the Torah give exceptions?
Kol b'behema oisatechelu, we said before. Okay. Amar the Mesharshia. So now the Mesharshia says in this connection, speaking of this Ben Pekua, L'dzivrei ha'oimer choshishin l'zera ha'av. Now, we mentioned before in the previous parak, earlier in our parak, and we're also going to discuss it later on in the next parak, that you have the question, when it comes to an animal, do we have to be choshish l'zera ha'av? Do we have to be concerned that for the identity and the status of the father who fathered this baby animal? Or do we only have to be concerned about the status of the mother? First of all, the main place where this comes up is going to be in the next parak. We're going to talk about the din of Oisav Es B'noi. When the Torah tells us that you can't shecht a parent animal and child animal on the same day, does that only refer to the mother and the baby, or does it also refer to the father and the baby? Mm-hmm. The Torah actually says Oisav Es B'noi, which literally means him and his son. However, that's the thing. So one way of looking at it is, now, first of all, in general, you don't know necessarily which male animal fathered a particular baby. And maybe nowadays you do. Maybe nowadays they keep track of such things. But in those days, they didn't necessarily. Maybe they do. I don't know. I guess maybe where it's important, maybe they don't do it on a regular basis. For example, with racing horses and whatever they do, because they have to keep the pedigree of them. But yeah, for regular animals, maybe you're right there. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the point is, usually when a baby animal is born, when a baby sheep or goat or cow or whatever is born, you don't necessarily know who the father is anyway. So then you don't have a problem anyhow. But if you know that a particular animal was the father, you still have an opinion whether choshishin l'zera ha'av or not. You have the opinion of Hananya in the next parak that says that you do, and you have the opinion of the Chachamim that say that you don't. So it's relevant as far as Oseh Vestimai, but it's also relevant to other areas in Halacha. One of them is over here. The Divrei Ha'oimah Choshishin, which we actually had, this quoted earlier in the parak also. The Divrei Ha'oimah Choshishin L'Zera Ha'av, according to the opinion of Hananya, that Choshishin L'Zera Ha'av, that we do also have to take into consideration the father's contribution to the baby, then the result would be Ben Pekua Habar Behema Maliasa. So now if you have a male Ben Pekua, this baby that was found alive in the womb, which we're saying doesn't need Shchita, according to the Chachamim and Reb Shimon Chazuri, if that animal now mates with a regular female animal that was not a ben pekua, havlad ein le'takana. The baby that results from that, there's no way of doing anything with it. You can't shecht it, and you can't not shecht it. Because like this, the status of ben pekua is inherited from parent to child. So if you have a male ben pekua and a female ben pekua, and they're mated, their children will actually be considered ben pekuas as well, whether they were found alive in the womb when you shechted the mother or not. This ben pekua is exactly what we're talking about over here, where you found a baby alive after a full-term pregnancy alive in the womb, where we're saying, according to the Chachamim, that you don't need to shecht it. That you're allowed to eat it, whether you can kill it any old way you want, or it can die naturally, and you can eat it. So that status is inherited by its offspring. If you have a male and female ben pekua mate and have babies, those babies are also considered bnei pekua. Even though they were born normally, right. However, now the Mesharshi is telling us if you have a male ben pekua and a female regular animal, then you have a problem. If you say choshishin l'zera ha'av, then what you have is effectively this baby is half ben pekua and half not. So what does that mean? Rashi explains, therefore, the result is an animal has two simonim, it has a windpipe and it has an esophagus. Here, since the baby is considered half ben pekua, it's as if one of those simonim is already shechted. And now when you're going to go to shecht the other one later, it's as if you have shehiyah. It's as if you have, there was a long pause between one part of the shechita and the next, and that's no good. Therefore, you have no way of being able to eat this baby animal. Tosfos disagrees a little bit with Rashi's explanation. It's not so much that you have, it's as if one simon is shechted. It's rather as if half of each of the two simonim was shechted. It amounts to the same thing, though. The point is, you can't shecht the baby because you can't do a valid shechita by shechting only half of each simon. You have to cut the majority of each simon. Well, at the same time, right. But the point is, here you only have effectively half a simon, because half a simon comes from the father and half comes from the mother. So if you say ein choshish,
well, that simon and one simon comes
according from to Rashi, it's one and one. According to Tosfos, it's half of one and half of the other. whatever, the point is that either way, you can't do a valid trith on it. So if you don't, if ain choshin l'zera av, then you don't have a problem. Because then you, the mother was a normal animal. But if you say, means we don't, means that we don't care about the father's contribution to the baby. We know that this particular ben pakua fathered this baby, sired this baby, but it doesn't matter. According to the Chachamim, we don't worry about that. We only care about the mother's contribution because she carried it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, according to that opinion, there's no problem. The mother is a regular animal, so the baby is a regular animal. You just shecht it and you have done with it. Mm-hmm. But if you say, okay, that's it. So therefore, havlad ein la takana. So there's no way of doing anything with the baby. You can't shecht it. You can't eat it without shechting. Okay. Amar Abaye. So now further talking about the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Chazuri. Why are we sticking this in over here before discussing Rav Shimon Chazuri's opinion more? So actually the Chacham Sofer brings from one of his Talmidim that a reason for it might be because now we have more reason to understand why the Tanakhama would say that once the baby walked on the ground that you have to consider it as like a regular animal, because over here you might have that you have more reason now to confuse a ben pekur with a regular animal, because here you have a case of a baby which is half ben pekur and half not, and you're not sure what to do with it. Omer Abaye. So Abaye says in this connection, Hakol Modim Bekolut Ben Pekua Shemuter. Now everybody would agree like this: if you have a Ben Pekua which was born with unsplit hooves. Right. So a kolut we mentioned a few times in this parak already is you have that even though a normal cow or sheep or goat or whatever is born with split hooves, this one has a deformity, has a mutation, and it has its hooves are together. You're still allowed to eat it; it's still a kosher species. So everybody would agree that if you have a kolut ben pekua shemuter, that such an animal would be mutter to eat, even according to the Chachamim, without shechita. Why? My time, I call milsa de tmiya, because when you have an unusual thing like that, that not only it was a ben pekua, but it was a kolut, midcha d'chiri lo inshi, people remember such a thing. So people are going to remember that this animal has a special status because it's a kolut, it's just unusual. Therefore, they're also going to remember it's a ben pekua, and later on, when they see the owner of it killing it and eating it without shechita, they're not going to think, hey, you don't need shechita. They're going to remember that, hey, this one was born as a ben pekua. Ikadamri, another version of the statement goes, Amar Abaye, Hakol Mordim Bekolot Ben Kluta Ben Pekua Shemuter. No, so actually what it is Abaye would say, if the Kolot is the child of a Kolot, which was a Pekua, in other words, they have two generations like that, the first generation was a Ben Pekua, and then the second generation was a female animal that was a kolut. Then later on it gave birth to another baby that was also a kolut. Then we would say
two generations
of kolut. Then shemutter. Then it would be mutter. My timer, trei tmihi mitchav tchiri inchi. Because here you already have two unusual things, that the mother and the baby were a kolut. That kind of thing people remember. So that kind of thing people remember. So you have two. Now you have two different opinions, and you have not
trait me
two unusual things. Now, but you have two lashonis in the Gemara over here. Usually, when you have two lashonis in the Gemara, the halacha is like the second one. So if you say like the second one, it would have to be machmer. Only if you have it, second generation, right, could you be makel on it. However, Rashi, what Rashi says, kolot ben kluta, it means like this, in other words. Again, the mother animal herself was a kolot. Then you shechted her and found this kolot inside her. That's what we mean, in other words. So it's a second generation kolot, it's a first generation ben pekua. So that you would be that everybody would agree, even when the baby starts walking, that you're allowed to eat it without shechita, according to the second version, because then you have two unusual things, that the mother was a kolot and the baby was a kolot, and therefore people are going to remember as well that the baby was a ben pekua. There's a first generation ben pekua. Well, if you have a second generation one, then we said before, first of all, you'd have to eat it. Well, no, because again, if we say chosh and lazara, then you would have to have both the mother and the father have to be ben pekua in order for the baby to even be mutter, otherwise it's also anything. As we said, if you say choshes and lazer ha'ab, and when we're not sure whether the halacha is that you have to, then it would mean if you have a normal animal and ben pekua that mate, then the baby you're not sure whether it's mutter or not, as we just said. Yeah. So no, here we're talking about, in other words, again, you have the mother was a kolot, was born regularly. Then she became pregnant, and when you shecht her and you find in the womb another kolot, then that kolot will be allowed to eat. You'll be allowed to be eaten even years later without shittek or something like that. People will remember when you have two things. Okay, so you have two lashonis in the Gemara over here. One that says you need one unusual thing, and the other one that says you need two unusual things. Usually we have a rule. When you have two lashonis in the Gemara, either we go according to the second one, or we go according to the one that's more machmer. In this case, either way, the second one is the more machmer, we ought to follow that. However, Hagois Asheri from the Rosh brings an interesting thing, that Rav Shira Gaon had a couple of animals that were b'nei pekua, and he was making a wedding for one of his children. So he took these b'nei pekua and killed them with an axe without not shita and served them at the wedding. Now, how is that? What happened to what we're saying over here? The answer is because there it's also an unusual thing, because the fact that it was served at a wedding is something that people are going to remember. People are going to remember, once they remember that, hey, we ate at the wedding something that was killed without shita, they're going to remember, yes, but it was a b'nei pekua. Once they remember the one unusual thing, which means, in other words, he's going like the first lashon in the Gemara over here. Now, how can we do that? One explanation is because since the whole thing we're talking about is only that the Chachamim are saying you make a gzeira drabanan because people might get mixed up. Therefore, we can be makel and go according to the first lashon. Since we're not talking about an Issur d'oraisa, we're only talking about a gzeira drabanan so that people don't get mixed up. So as long as they have one unusual circumstance, then that's it.
Seems like a dangerous precedent.
But that's the thing. Rav Shira Gaon is telling us, and then is telling us that not. So, yeah.
Okay.
Now, who is the halacha like in Amish? Omer Ziri, Omer Rav Chanina. Halacha could have Shimon Shazuri. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri, that we don't ever make such a gzera. Any regular ben pekua, you're allowed to kill it any time you want, even if it's several years old, any year. And in fact, Reb Shimon Shazuri would hold, again, that the status transfers from parent to child throughout all the generations. Again, as long as you have purebred b'nei pekua. If there's a non-b'nei pekua mixed in there at some point, then you have the problem that Reb Shashi pointed out before.
It has to be
purebred b'nei pekua, a male b'nei pekua and a female b'nei pekua in the first generation, and the same thing in the second generation, and so forth, in order for it to be.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you ever have a non-bent kur in there, then if you hold like Hananiah, and we might hold like Hananiah because we're not sure what the halacha is, then you would have a problem.
So you couldn't eat it.
Then you couldn't eat it, right. Okay. Rabbi Yechanan disagrees with that. No. Humoter ubnoi oster. Fine. I agree the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shazuri as far as the first generation bent kura, but not for the future generation. The future generation, says Rabbi Yechanan, would still require shchita. Okay. So here's a case. Oder Bar Chovu, that was his name. Oder Bar Chovu is the name of a person. Havel et Ben Pekua. He had an animal, a Ben Pekua, that was found in the womb.
First generation.
The Nafal Druba Ale, where a wolf attacked it on the face of it. Druba sounds like it should mean a bear.
Yeah.
But Rashi translated it as Ze'e, a wolf. Because the Aramaic word for wolf is Deva. So that could be Druba over here. Deva is basically the same thing. Yeah. So a wolf attacked it. So a wolf attacked it, that a wolf attacked it so badly that it wasn't going to survive. In other words, it's maybe even beyond trefa, whatever. Can't he eat it? Also, Chamei de Ravashi, so he comes to Ravashi, Amalei Zil Shachte. So Ravashi tells him, no problem, go ahead and shecht it. One second. So then the Chachamim of our Mishnah say it requires shechita, however, you don't have to worry about the trefa. Amalei, so he says to him, apparently his Oda Bachovah was a shtickle Tam Chacham, why do I even need to shecht it? Ha'amah Ze'iri, Amar Rav Chanina Halacha Rav Shimon Shazuri, V'chein Ho'i Rav Shimon Shazuri, Mati B'bnoi Ben B'nai Adsef Vladuris. Didn't we just say the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri, and Rav Shimon Shazuri even says that's Mutar Adsef Vladuris?
So he was both sides of Ben Pekua.
No, this was the first generation Ben Pekua.
This
is the first generation Ben Pekua. It was found in the womb alive.
Okay.
Later on, when it grew up, it was attacked by this wolf. So Oder Bachov is asking Rav Ashi, why are you telling me that I have to shecht it specifically before it dies naturally? In other words, before it dies from its wounds or whatever. After all, Zairi Omer of Chanina about the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri that doesn't even require shechita at all, and Rav Shimon Shazuri is master even by future generations. And even Rabbi Yechanan, who disagrees with part of that, he disagrees with Ze'iri and limits the heter only to the first generation. But you know, as far as the first generation itself, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't disagree. He agrees, apparently, the halacha is like a shiv and shizuri. So why are you telling me I have to shecht it? And if the animal were to just die from the attack of the wolf before I have a chance to shecht it, why couldn't I eat it also? Amalei, so Rabbi Ashi answers him, Rabbi Yochanan l'divrid of shiv and shizuri, kamar. Rabbi Yochanan is not telling us that I'm saying that you can eat the first generation without shechita. He's saying, even if you say that Rav Shimon, even if you say the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shizuri, nevertheless, not like you, Zairi, are telling me that the halacha is like him, that he is saying as far as all future generations, even Rav Shimon Shizuri himself is only talking about the first generation. I myself, Rabbi Yochanan, is saying, I disagree with the whole premise. I don't hold the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shizuri at all. I hold the halacha is like a chachamim. Well, if the halacha is like a chachamim, once it steps on the ground, then you got to shecht it. Even the first generation. So the question is, so he continues asking, this guy wasn't going to give up so easily. We also see that Ravin bar Chanina says in the name of Ula, in the name of Rav Chanina, that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shizuri. Now that in and of itself is no stronger, fine, the same way as he can argue with the Zairi, he can also argue with Ravin bar Chanina. But the point is, beloy oid, and this statement goes even further, not only that, any place in the Mishnayos where, any place in Mishnayos where Rav Shimon Shizuri says a halacha, then it says a din that the halacha is like him. On the side of it, it brings from the Thoras Hashas that maybe it's not only in Mishnayos, maybe it's in Brises as well. Anyway, the point is this is a much stronger statement. Yeah. So that means the halacha is like him. So yeah.
Almost agree with that.
Yeah. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, fine, very well, you have that statement that the halacha is always like Rav Shimon Shizuri, but I hold differently. Anoki hosverly, I hold like a report as follows. The Amr of Yonason, or Rav Yochanan, it says on the side maybe, I have heard a different report that Rav Yonason or Rav Yochanan says like this. Halacha to Rav Shimon Shizuri, b'mesukan over trumas ma'is yishol d'mai. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Shizuri, but only in two places. When it comes to a person who's dangerously ill, and when it comes to Turmas Maiser of Mai, but not necessarily in other cases, including not necessarily in our Mishnah. So not necessarily is the halacha like him. So not necessarily is the halacha like him in our Mishnah. Ditznan. So one second. So Mesukan. Where do we see Rav Shimon Shizuri addressing the case of a person who is dangerously ill? What's that case? Ditznan. So we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin like this. Originally, the Chachamim said the following din. Now, what it is like this. Usually, when a person gives instructions that a get should be written for his wife, that's not enough. Because just because he says write it doesn't necessarily mean for it to be delivered yet. He might just mean write it and then hold on to it and give it or give it to me or whatever, and at some later date, I'll decide whether I want to use it. If he says deliver it, if he says kissable, it's new, then you do it.
And no, if he says just new.
He just has two, then he has to give them permission to write it. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, they're not a shulchan to write it. No. Those are cases that are discussed in Gittin. So he has to kissvu uchnu. But barishoinu hayu'imrim, originally the Chachamim said, the din is like this, hayoytze b'koiler, if somebody is being taken out in chains by the government to be executed, v'omav kissvu get l'ishti, and he says before he gets executed, write a get for my wife. Now, why would he want to do that? The obvious case would be because you have an issue of yibum or chalitza involved, because he's childless, and if he doesn't give her a get, then she's going to need yibum or chalitza, and he wants to avoid having to do that. Yeah. So if he says, write a get for my wife, even though he didn't say give it, nevertheless, they can give it and they can deliver it because he meant for them to give it to her. He was out of panic. He wasn't thinking straight because he's about to be executed. So therefore, he forgot to mention to give it to her. But that's evidently what he meant.
That's the halacha of Rav Shimon.
No. That's the halacha according to everyone. Later on, the Chachamim also added to that there are other cases where that applies to Achim of Farish v'hayoyse b'shiyara. Also somebody who's about to go out on a voyage over the sea, or a person who is about to go to leave with a caravan to walk through the desert. Same thing. If they say before they leave, kiss will get leishti, again, we can assume that in their haste they forgot to mention to give it, but that's what they meant. Rav Shimon Shizuri, Omer Acha Masukan. And here's where Rav Shimon Shizuri comes and says, also this would apply to a person who's dangerously ill. So he's not about to be executed. He's not about to leave on a voyage or whatever. But because he's dangerously ill, Rav Shimon Chazuri says same thing. Mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames means as far as dinim mominus, that you have to fulfill what he says as far as dinim mominus. That has nothing to do with him writing. But ain't get lachamisa. If he says while he's alive, fine. You want to? Oh, you're talking about Jewish Shimonaki Silvan B'chemisurin. Fine, but that still doesn't make that he didn't say to give it. That wouldn't necessarily include to give it, unless we can assume that when he said to give it, automatically that when he said to write it, automatically includes to give it. We wouldn't consider that necessarily. So therefore, the Shimon Shazuri says that nevertheless it does. If he just said write it, then we can assume he wasn't thinking straight and he meant to say give it as well. So that's one case without lachos like Shimon Shazuri. Trumas Ma'aser Shel Dmai. Where do we see that Rav Shimon Chazuri addresses the case of Trumas Ma'aser of Dmai? We know what Dmai is, I'm sure, that the produce of an Amoris, where we know he took Truma from it, but we don't know if he took all the other Ma'asers from it. So, the Tanan, now we learn in a Mishnah like this. The first part of that Mishnah tells us like this, that if you bought produce from an Amoris before Shabbos, and now you forgot to take Ma'aser from it before Shabbos, and now comes Shabbos, and you don't know whether you can eat from it, the first part of that Mishnah says that you can ask the Amoris on Shabbos, and then you can eat. If he says that he took Ma'aser, then you're allowed to trust him and eat it. Because an interesting concept, the Yerushalmi says over there, in the Sefer Tzmai, Amoris respect Shabbos so much that they won't lie on it. You see what caliber the Amoris were in those days compared to people nowadays, that they were afraid to lie on Shabbos. They would not lie on Shabbos, so therefore if he tells you that he maistered it, so fine, you can't necessarily rely on that for the week. Still after Shabbos, you have to take proper truma and maister. Not maister, but at least on Shabbos, yeah. So then the Mishnah continues, trumas maister shall demai shechazer l'makayma. What happens in another case? Now, remember, given that this is demai, the only thing you don't have to take from it is regular truma, but you still have to take maister rishon from it, you still have to take maister sheni or maister ani, and you still have to take trumas maister. Now, granted, your trumas maaser, you don't necessarily have your. Now, granted, the rest of the maaser, you're allowed to keep to a certain extent because it's always a suffix whether you have to give them or not. But trumas maaser has the same status as truma, and therefore, in this case, you can't eat it yourself. You have to give it to the kohen. Just in case, the trumas maaser. Again, the truma, you know the Amor artists took truma because you know all the Amor artists knew to take truma, but not all of them took maaser and trumas maaser. So therefore, you have to take out trumas maaser and give that to the kohen. The problem now is trumas ma'aser shel demai shechazer l'makayma. What happens? You separated out trumas ma'aser from this demai, but then it fell back in to the whole mixture. Now you have a problem. In order to be mevatel truma, that then a zohar can eat the whole thing. That you just have to take out one saw of it and give it to the kohen. One whatever the amount that fell in and give it to the kohen. You need 100 times as much. Here you only have 99 times as much because trumas ma'aser is 100th of the total. So you're going to have a huge loss over here because you're going to end up having to sell the whole thing to Kohenim at the price of Truma. And the price of Truma is much less than the price of Kohen because you have fewer people who eat it and they have to eat it for Tara. So there's much less demand for Truma.
How much less?
Whatever it is, there's a certain amount less. It probably depends on supply and demand. But whatever, the point still remains that whatever it is, Truma will always sell for less than Kohen because you have fewer people who can eat it and they have to eat it for Tara. If it becomes Tomid and the whole thing is lost to them, they can only use it for firewood. So therefore, necessarily, it gets a lesser price. So you're going to have a huge loss over here.
Is that historically true or economically true? Because I feel like there would be more competition for, you know, because there's pride, you know, like, oh, such and such Kohen, but my Truma, you know. Like
first of all, one second.
Hold on.
In a regular case, when you take out truma and trumas maaser from your produce, you don't sell it to the kohen, you give it to him. That's not yours to sell. Here we're talking about you had 1 pound of trumas maaser, fell into 99 pounds of regular cholin. Now, because we can't be sure where the pound of trumas maaser is, the result is you have to sell you have to take the entire 100 pounds, sell it to kohenim for the price of 99 pounds of truma. You can't charge him for the 1 pound of truma smaiser because it wasn't yours to sell, but the rest of it has to be considered truma misafik. So you sell it to him as if it was truma, as if it was 99 pounds of truma.
And you sell it as if it was 100 truma?
No, because you can't charge him for the pound of truma. It's not yours to sell. You have to give it to that game in the first place. But the point is, you're still going to be taking a bath on it because you're going to be selling it for a much lesser price. Sort of Shimon Shazuri, I miss it. Of Shimon Shazuri says, what can you do to fix up the situation? Af b'choil, even on weekdays, where there's always the possibility that the Amoris might lie, shoyaloi, Nevertheless, says Rav Shimon Chazuri, you can still ask the Amah Oretz, did you actually take Ma'aser from it? Because if he did, then this wasn't Trumas Ma'aser anyway. Then you have no problem. But Oichloy Alpiv, if he says he took Ma'aser, then you're allowed to eat. Then you're allowed to eat based on what he says. So even though it's a weekday and there's always the possibility that he's lying.
If he took Ma'aser.
If he had taken Ma'aser and Trumas Ma'aser and everything, then there's no problem. The one sof, the pound or whatever, that you took out of Trumas Ma'aser is not really Trumas Ma'aser. Because you didn't need to. It was all the Trumas and Ma'aser. It was already taken by the Amah Oretz. So therefore, there wouldn't be any problem with Meduma. There wouldn't be any problem with the mixture over here. So you can ask him, did you actually take Ma'aser and Trumas
during the week?
Even though he lies during the week, nevertheless, Rav Shimon Chazuri says, because you have a hefset over here, therefore you're allowed to be soimach on him. Tosfos brings actually from the Yerushalmi. Well, the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri, yes. Although Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi a different reason that Rav Shimon Chazuri takes the view. Yes, the Amei Oretz are careless about taking Ma'aser and Trumas Ma'aser in the first place. However, they know that Trumas Ma'aser has kedusha, and that has to be eaten only by Kohanim, and therefore, if it gets mixed into regular produce, they're going to be concerned about that. They wouldn't lie about such a thing and then make it that you're going to end up eating that you're going to end up eating something that you shouldn't, or that you're going to end up having to suffer a loss that you shouldn't, or whatever. And therefore, they'll tell you. The expression in Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi: Emas Dimua Al Amei Oretz. The Amei Oretz are concerned about about this case of Truma being mixed into Cholin, and therefore they'll tell you the truth.
The Truma is the Sheva Cholin. The Maser
Rishon. Yishon in principle goes to the Levi, although with Jemai you don't have to do that because you could tell the Levi, prove that this wasn't Maser,
right.
And then I'll give it to you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
but
the Truma
is the Cholin. The Maser Rishon goes to the Levi, but out of that the Levi takes Truma's Maser and gives it to the Cholin.
Right.
Yeah. And then you have Maser Sheni or Maser Oni, depending on the year.
Ma'aser Sheni is what?
Ma'aser Sheni, you take to your Shalayim and eat it, or you exchange it for money and take the money to your Shalayim and eat it. Yeah. Okay, so the bottom line is that Rav Ashi is saying, I don't hold like Rav Shimon Chazuri. Rav Ashi is saying, I don't hold like the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri in this case over here. I hold the halacha is like him only in those two cases of the Masukkan and and not Kalayim, of the Masukkan and the Trumas Ma'aser Shodmai, but by everything else, not Kalayim. Who said anything about Kalayim? Trumas Ma'aser Shodmai, yeah. But other than that, the halacha is not like him, and therefore he's telling Odeh Bar-Fabu, therefore you have to shech the dam.
So what's the halacha?
So Tosfos says over here that, given that we have a halacha lemaisa over here, then that would mean indeed the halacha would be in this case you would have to shecht this animal. Yes, the ben pekua, but it did walk on the ground, and the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Chazuri, as we see from our Gemara over here. Therefore, the fact remains that you would have to shecht it. So, in fact, Tosfos points out there's another nafkamina of it also, that actually Rav Shimon Chazuri has a statement in the Sefer Shabbos about certain kinds of fuels that you're allowed or not allowed to use for Shabbos candles. So the halacha, if the halacha is not like him in everything he says, that means the halacha is not like him either, says Tosfos, and therefore you'd be allowed to use even the ones that he says you're not allowed to. But, okay. So you actually have, though, you have... On the other hand, you have poskim who do paskin like Rav Shimon Chazuri, and say that because they can say that, okay, Rav Ashi has his opinion, Rav Yechanan has his opinion, doesn't necessarily mean so there is an opinion, there are poskim who paskin like Rav Shimon Chazuri that in Hifris Agabe Karka then it wouldn't need Shchita.
So the halacha that Chazuri is paskining.
Rav Shimon Chazuri, yeah.
It seems to depend on his notion of what Amei Haaretz would or would not do. So how does he, quantify that?
Well, first of all, you have to realize Roiv Amei Haaretz Ma'asrim Nehen anyway. The most Amei Haaretz did take proper Truma and Ma'aser. The whole Ma'aser as well. Most Amei Haaretz, all Amei Haaretz took Truma. Most of them also took Ma'aser and everything else as well. it's a significant minority that didn't. That's why we have the whole concept of mind. But therefore, we have different kulas in it, and this is one that Rav Shimon Chazuri is saying that we can remake on.
If you're a post today and you're looking at, you know, like, how do you, is there like a systematic way of quantifying what Amiyars do and do not do?
I don't know, but I guess in those times they had smaller communities, they were able to keep track of things more, yeah. People are all living more or less in one place in the world, or, you know, mostly, you know, to Israel and Babel, so yeah. It was easier to take that. Okay. All right. So now we're going to
question in.
Maybe.
Who takes Matera? Thomas Matera and Marpage.
Okay, yeah.
And the ones who want to know, then you couldn't offer them during the week, and once you want to
right,
know,
right.
Yeah, 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 sure. not exactly. But, okay. Sure. All right. So let's go on. So let's see over here, actually. I believe that Rambam passed in like Rav Shimon Chazuri, but let's see. Let's see over here. Parakei of Machos, Asuras, Halacha, Yudalad. See, that's where in Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah comes in. This is Safari, actually. He does actually pass in, not like Rav Shimon Chazuri, like the Chacham and the Hufris HaGadol character. Then it requires Shechita. Fine, so that's that. So it's not transmissible from generation. The extent that it's transmissible from generation to generation is what we talked about before, that if you, since actually Minat Torah would be Mutter without Shechita, and it's only a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan that it requires, therefore if you have a mixed breed of a Kura, of Ben Kura and non-Ben Kura, then we have the problem that you mentioned before, whether Choshen L'Zera'av or not, can this child be Shechted or not? That you still have. That you still have, because even the Chachamim agree that Midoraisi would be allowed to eat the baby without Shechita. They're just arguing with him about, do we make a Gzeirah when Hifris Agabe Kaufa, when it steps on the ground.
And the Gzeirah would be for...
Because people might confuse it with a regular animal. So unless we have an unusual situation, like we were saying before, where then you're allowed to. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to get back to the matter of Shechita, actually. We're actually going to be dealing in more detail with a Shechita that we haven't dealt with. We mentioned in passing in the previous credits, but we didn't really get into it. The reason why, so now why is it doing, why did we stop with Trefus and start talking about this and then return to this? So there's a couple of reasons. One, the Me'iri says like this, because the whole thing that we were talking about from the beginning of the parak, where the baby animal sticks out a limb, and we're saying that limb is considered Trefa, so effectively what it is we talked about in the previous parak where an entire animal is Trefa. Now in our parak we're talking about where a limb of an animal is Trefa. And now, so we're continuing with another case of Trefa.
Which is what?
Which is
going
to see. We're going to see. There's going to be one case where only a limb and another case where the entire animal. Okay. The Rambam says a little bit differently. What it is since we were talking before about Abraham the Duldo, we talked about before, that a dangling limb from an animal, when it can become mutter and when not. So now our Mishnah is going to be talking about a similar case.
Are we coming back to the Abraham
Duldo? Well, sort of. So the Mishnah says, if an animal's legs, and by the way, legs over here, we mean specifically the hind legs. There's no trefus in the front legs.
There's no trefus in the front legs?
Right.
Except when there's the hooves.
No, what do you mean when they're in the hooves?
When they're not split.
A colot, we said, is kosher. A colot, we said, the fetish is kosher. If it's a species that has non-split hooves, of course, it's not kosher. But within a kosher colot species.
Only in the front legs?
No. Colot can be any of the hooves. It can be one, or it can be all four, whatever. But even if all four of them are colot, it's still kosher.
Right.
Only if, as long as it's the offspring of kosher animals.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, behema shenechtechu ragleha, if an animal's hind legs were chopped off, min ha'akuba olamata, anywhere from the akuba and below, and akuba means a joint, but we'll see in the Gemara which joint we're talking about. Kshera, then the animal is still kosher. Min ha'akuba olamayla, but if it's cut off from the akuba and upward, psula, then it is possible it's tre. V'chein shenitzal tseimus ha'gidin, and similarly also if the tseimus ha'gidin was removed. So here we have to start talking about the tseimus ha'gidin. We've touched on it in the previous.
Akuba
is a joint. So one thing we have to realize, and this will be important for the discussion in the Gemara, we've mentioned before, an animal's leg has three long bones in it, and therefore there are two joints that concern us. You have the upper leg, which corresponds to a human upper leg, and then you have a joint in front of it, which is like our knee. In fact, you even have a kneecap over there, like
right.
we do.
Right.
In most animals, though, like in cows and whatever, that joint you can't really see from the outside because it's hidden within the body.
Right.
In a camel, as the Gemara is going to tell us, you can see it more clearly. So that's that. Then you have the middle bone of the leg.
The tibia
corresponds to the lower part of our leg. And again, you have a joint on the bottom of it, where that joint is actually made up of a bunch of small bones, similar to our wrist and our heel. And then you have another bone below that, which does in human beings that would be the equivalent of the palm of our hand or the sole of our foot. But in animals, it's one long.
There's no joint between the lower bone and the.
There are, but that's the equivalent of the joints between our palm of our hand and our fingers. Remember that hooved animals effectively walk on tiptoes. So you have those little bones over here correspond to the finger bones. But this bone over here, in English it's called the cannon bone. In Gemara terminology, we're going to call it akuba hanimkeres im harosh, the joint that's sold together with the head, because that's what they used to do in those times. Is they used to, when they sold the head of an animal, they would sell also this joint together with it.
So we have
for us a bunch of bones because it's all the bones that form the palm of the hand and the sole of the foot. By an animal, they're all fused together into one bone.
These are the bones here
of the fingers and toes. This bone over here, this long bone over here. Listen. 1, 2, 3. Those correspond to the three parts of the leg of an animal. And then below those, you have the small bones, and eventually you have the hooves. So the third bone over here in an animal, corresponds to this in a human being.
Right, you have many bones over here.
They're individual long bones over there. They're individual long bones, and in human beings, you have five of them, one for each finger, and an animal, they're all fused together into one.
Okay,
I'm not talking about the wrist bones. The wrist bones correspond to the six small bones that are in the joint over here that we're going to discuss later.
Okay.
This corresponds to the wrist. Okay, so the question is, when our Mishnah says that if the animal's legs were chopped off,
this would be like the finger bones?
These are like the finger bones. They're the palm of the hand bones. Let me show you a picture of a human hand. Here.
You're saying this is like the carpal bones.
Yeah, that's okay. Here, 1 second. X-ray of a human hand. Let's see. So you have these fingers, right? But below the fingers, you also have bones, which in us human beings are all hidden within the palm of the hand. Right? That's the gray that you have around them.
The metacarpals.
Okay. If that's the name for them, fine. So those bones are what correspond to this akuvah and keres imarosh in an animal.
Okay. So where is these bones?
These small bones over here correspond to here. To these bones in this joint over here, between the middle bone and the bottom bone.
Right, the third joint.
Yeah. Well, it's like the wrist. That's what I said.
Third one.
We're not counting the one up here. The one up here already, yeah, that's the hip joint, and that we said before, if that's dislocated, then the animal is straight. We're not talking about that.
Right. Okay.
So which of the other joints we're talking about, we'll see in the Gemara. Again, the animal's legs were chopped off below the akuba, which akuba we'll see in the Gemara. We'll see what it was. Then it's kshed. I mean, akuba, l'mayla psula, if it's above the akuba, it's possible. V'chein shenitzal tzoymes ha-gidin. Also, if the tzoymes ha-gidin was removed. So the tzoymes ha-gidin, gidin has a number of different meanings in Gemara terminology. Basically, a gid is anything long and skinny. Sometimes it means blood vessels, sometimes it means nerves. When we talk about gidanosha, for example, it means nerves. Sometimes it even means a male organ. In our case over here, what it means is tendons. Famous hagidin is a bunch of tendons, as we'll see in the Gemara, 3 in an animal, 16 in a bird, that are joined together in a certain area of the leg. So if that famous hagidin is removed or cut or whatever, then the animal is chesed. Continues the mission. Nishbar ha'etzem. If a bone broke in the animal, im roiva boser kayim. If most of the flesh is intact, and we'll see what that means in the Gemara. Shchitosim taharkei. So now let's see. In other words, so first our Mishnah was talking about, let's say, where a hind leg was chopped off. We said it depends whether it's below or above the akuba, and it depends whether the same as I did in our involved. Now we're saying, let's say a bone in the hind legs broke, but so the animal, it's still attached, but it's broken.
Right.
So if roi ma'bosa kaim, if most of the flesh is still intact, as we'll see in the Gemara, what that means exactly, shchitosim etahar, then the shchita is metaharit, and that limb is even mutter to eat. The imlav, en shchitosim etahar, if not, then the shchita is not metaharit, because you're back to the problem that we said before about basada tereza, we're back to the problem of Abraham Duldo, because the limb that's dangling, that doesn't have enough of a connection to the body anymore. So again, that's one reason why we're bringing this in over here, is as we were discussing Abraham and Dodo before, so now we're bringing this in as a related topic. When we say in our Mishnah, when we say Lamata and Lamaila min ha'arkuba, Lamata means Lamata min ha'arkuba. When we say if it was chopped off below, means directly below the arkuba. In other words, Rashi explains like this. Remember, that word arkuba means a joint, and therefore there's two possibilities. Does it mean this joint over here, which is the equivalent of our knee joint, or does it mean this one, which is the equivalent of our ankle joint?
You cannot mean the low joints down.
It certainly doesn't mean that one, because then what's below it? I mean, at that point, all you have is the hooves. Obviously, it's not going to be caught there. Yeah. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rab Chia is saying it means only if it was cut directly below the arkuba. In other words, what he wants to tell us is that the arkuba that we're talking about over here is the lower one, the one that corresponds to our wrist. So if it's cut off below there, is it kosher? Lamaila in harkuba, and lamaila would be if it was cut off anywhere above that, then it would be treisa. And why? Because the same as Hagidin are involved over there. The Ezu Arkuba Omru, which Arkuba, which joint, or which joint are we talking about? We're talking about the Arkuba that's sold together with the head, meaning the lowest, meaning the cannon bone over here, meaning the one that corresponds to the palm of our hand.
So not the knee.
So we're not talking about the knee, we're talking about the next joint, the below the knee, which is the wrist joint. Only if it's cut off below that is it kosher, he's saying. But if it's cut off anywhere above that, then the animal would be traced, because then already the same as I get it are involved. Ula Omer of Oshia, on the other hand, Ula says in the name of Rav Oshia, no, the joint that we're talking about over here in our Gemara, Kenegde Begomel Nikr, that would be the joint which is more noticeable in a camel. So you can see over
that
here.
Would be the upper one.
Well, that would be the upper one, exactly.
So
because that's what he's saying. In other words, unlike you, Rabbi Yehuda, are arguing that Arkuba means this joint over here, I'm telling you that Arkuba means this one, the upper joint. And therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that if the animal's leg was chopped off below that, it can still be kosher.
The knee joint.
The knee joint, yeah. Okay. Omale Ula Rabbi Yehuda. So Ula says to Rabbi Yehuda like this. Let's consider then. So you're telling me that Arkuba means the lower joint. I'm telling you it means the upper joint. According to me, that I'm saying that it means the joint which is more noticeable, which is noticeable on a camel, meaning the knee joint. Then we understand. The Mishnah is telling us like this. Two different cases. One is where the leg was chopped off below the one is talking about where the leg was chopped off below the knee joint, but still above the same sagidin.
is a bunch of tendons
that are on the lower joint, right? So Ula is arguing to Rav Yehuda like this. If you tell it, if I'm saying that the joint that the Mishnah is talking about, where if it's cut off below that is kosher, that's this joint over here. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us two separate cases. One is where the leg was chopped off over here, where it's kosher, and the other case would be if it was chopped off below that, but the tzemes hagidin were removed, then it will be traced because the tzemes hagidin were removed. Because those tendons were removed.
These
tendons over here.
Right.
It's these tendons over here. We're going to discuss soon exactly what tendons they are.
So one case
would be where it's cut off over here. The whole leg from here and below
is affected.
So the tzemes hagidin is affected because that whole part of the leg is gone. So the Mishnah would be telling us that it's still kosher.
If you cut the leg off
over here, then the same thing are gone because they're below it. They're at the next joint down. So therefore, in other words, so the Mishnah is telling us that it's true if the leg were to be cut off over here, it would be kosher. However, if the leg itself is intact, the same thing have been removed, then it'll be changed. That would be what the Mishnah is telling us. says all of them. El Lidach. So that's why the Mishnah says, V'chein Shenitzal Tzemes HaGidin. Also, another case where it would be chafed, not only if it was cut off above that joint, but even if it was damaged below that joint and the Tzemes HaGidin were removed or cut or what have you. El Lidach, but according to you that says that we're talking about the same joint that the Tzemes HaGidin are on anyway, my V'chein Shenitzal Tzemes HaGidin. And then what are you saying, and also if the same thing, which is the lower joint, then what are you telling me, the same thing if the same thing were removed, it amounts to the same thing, yeah. On the lay, so Rabbi Yehuda answers him, what we mean is like this, the Mishnah means Rechova below Tzemes HaGidin, but Tzemes HaGidin below Rechova. It means it can be one or the other. Rechova is another word for Akova, it means the joint. So it means either if the joint was cut off only without the Tzemes HaGidin being affected, or if the Tzemes HaGidin are removed without the joint, without any of the bones, without in either way, right. No. Okay, if it was cut off below the joint, then it's kosher. If it's cut off above the joint, then you have two possibilities. One where the bone is cut off above the joint and the Tzemes HaGidin are still intact, they're still hanging off over there on the end, in which case it's chafed, because it's above the joint. And the other one where the joint is intact and the Tzemes HaGidin were removed, then it'll also be chafed.
So below the joint, it's
below the joint, it'll be kosher if it's broken and tanned bone. Joint. Above the joint, then it'll be, whether or not the Tzemes HaGidin are involved, it'll be chafed, basically. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, what do you mean? What do you mean? But the Mishnah used the expression if they were cut, meaning in other words, implying they were completely cut off. Means that the leg was completely cut off. So what do you mean? What do you mean that you could have part of the leg was removed and the same as the gidden are still intact? Nechtechu implies the whole bottom part of the leg is missing. Ishtik. So Rabbi Yehuda was quiet and he couldn't think of an answer to that. Labasa did nothing. After Ula left, Omar then Rabbi Huda said to himself, "My time, you know what I should have thought to answer him? That Lamata and Lamaila in our Mishnah are not both relative to the joint. One is relative to the joint, and the other one is relative to the Tzemes HaGidin. That Lamaila, that I could have answered him. I could have told him Lamata means Harakuba. If it's broken or cut off, whatever, if it's cut off below the Harakuba, below the joint, then it's kosher, because then definitely the Tzemes HaGidin are not affected. And if it's cut above that point, if it's cut
below the Tzemes HaGidin, no.
Lamaila, when we say that, Lamata would be Lamata from the Tzemes HaGidin and the joint. And Lamaila would mean, what does the Mishnah mean when it says, Minarkobo, Lamaila Psula, would mean if it was cut off above the Tzemes HaGidin. And then therefore there would be a Chiddush in the Mishnah. If it was cut off above the Tzemes HaGidin, or even if the entire thing is intact but the Tzemes HaGidin were removed, then it's still trade. Ula is asking on me, what do you mean, Lamaila, meaning above the joint, right above the joint, you have the Tzemes HaGidin. I should have answered him that Lamaila doesn't mean right above the joint, it means above the Tzemes HaGidin. If it's cut off above there, that whole part of the leg, including the Tzemes HaGidin, is missing, or if the whole leg is intact, but the Tzemes HaGidin are not intact, either way it's straight, only if it's cut off below the Tzemes HaGidin, is it kosher? Why didn't I answer him that?
So Lamaila means... Either far above
the joint, right. And Lamata would be anywhere above the Tzemes HaGidin. And Lamata would be below the joint.
But Lamata is far away from the joint.
Far away from the joint.
What happens?
Then it would be Tzeis. That's the Mishnah itself, because everything is missing, including the Tzemes HaGidin. And number two, if the leg itself is intact, the Tzemes HaGidin, what's going on? Mm-hmm. I should have told him that. Harder Omar, then Rabbi Yehuda rethinks to himself and says, you know what, I might as well not have bothered. The loy amrilay, didn't I already tell him my previous explanation that Lamata and Lamaila are both relative to the joint, but omali nechtechu katani? And he says to me, yeah, but the Mishnah says nechtechu, which implies that it was completely cut off. Here also, he would have answered me, you can't say Lamaila means above the Tzemes HaGidin, because the fact is, the Mishnah uses the expression, Lamaila min harakuba. So he would have told me, that's no good. Lamaila min harakuba implies directly above the joint, nothing to do with the position of the Tzemes HaGidin. So again, Ula would have still said that supports my opinion that the joint we're talking about over here is the knee joint rather than the wrist joint. Okay. Okay. Rapapa Masni Hachi. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it's fine. Either way, Ula wouldn't have accepted my explanation. Okay. Rapapa Masni Hachi. Rapapa learns the discussion a little differently. He learns what Rabbi Yehuda said differently. Hachi Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Rav Amr Rav Chiya. Lamata means lamata min ha'akuba umit semes ha'gidin. That indeed, the word lamata means below the joint and below the semes ha'gidin. At that point, if the leg is chopped off, it's kosher. Lamaila means lamaila min ha'akuba umit semes ha'gidin. The word lamaila means above the akuba and also above the semes ha'gidin. Then it would be treis. And v'chein shenitol semes ha'gidin. And and also another case where the semes ha'gidin were removed. V'akuba gufa k'du'ula. The definition of akuba in this explanation over here would actually be the same as ula, that it means the upper, that it means the upper joint. In other words, Rav Papa, so now Rav Papa is saying there is no difference. Practically speaking, therefore, it comes out Rav Yehuda is saying the same thing as Ola. If it's chopped off above the upper joint, above the knee joint, for sure it's kosher. If it's chopped off below the lower joint, then it's kosher. If it's chopped off in the middle, then it depends whether the same as Hagidin are affected.
And Ula was saying what?
Ula was saying the same thing. So therefore, that's the thing. So Rav Papa is saying that it comes out that Rabbi Huda and Ula are expressing it differently, but they come out saying the same halacha. Okay. Fine. Amr of Oshia. So Rav Oshia says on this, but what are you talking about? You're telling me, according to Ula's first lashon and according to Rav Papa, you're telling me that it's possible for the leg to be cut off somewhere somewhere below the knee joint and still be kosher because the semis hagidin aren't affected. The question is, how could that be? What's the logic that if you cut off higher, then the animal will still be able to live, but if you cut down lower down on the limb, then the animal will die? What's the logic that if you cut over here where the semis hagidin are, then it'll be treis, but if you cut off over here, then it'll be kosher when the whole semis hagidin have been removed? And work together with the rest of the leg. Amar Ravashi, so Ravashi says, an expression that we've already had a few times, Terefus Kamadamis Lahadabi. Are you comparing cases of Terefus to each other? Ain't even but Terefus Zudoim Lazu. You don't draw analogies like that, where that this case of Terefus should be similar to that one. Shari Chos Kamikan Ramesa Chos Kamikan Bechoya. Because you have exactly that. But sometimes you cut. An animal in one place and it lives and in one place and it dies in a different place and it lives. So therefore, that would actually be the halacha. Yes, if the leg is cut off any above the semis hagidin, such as the semis hagidin are not affected at all, they've just been completely removed from the animal along with that part of the leg, then fine. But if it's cut in such a way that it affects the semis hagidin, then you have a problem. And by the way, you have your shonim who learn, you have your shonim who say, therefore, so what would that mean? If you have an animal whose semis hagidin were damaged, what can you do? Chop off the leg above that, someplace above the middle half of the bone over there, where it's not semis hagidin anymore, and then it'll go back to being kosher. Other Rishonim say, no, we have a rule that once an animal is trefa, it can't go back to being non-trefa. So they would say that's no good. Once it became trefa, once the semis hagidin has been affected, they would say it's too late.
Shouldn't change anything.
That's the point. But you have some Rishonim who learn that it would. Because they would say that the fact is the problem is the semis hagidin. Now the semis hagidin aren't involved because they've been completely because that whole area is gone from the animal. Then no, the same way as we would say that if to begin with it got chopped off over here, the same way they would say if it was damaged over here and later on chopped off over here, then they would say it's good also. Okay. All right. The Elohein semis hagidin. Now, what exactly are the semis hagidin?
That's a famous question.
Yeah. Well, famous once we know the concept of semis hagidin, and yeah, so now we have to define. I mean, there are a lot of gidin, especially semis literally means the junction. Gidin has a broad meaning. It means various kinds of long, skinny things in the animal. Over here, we mean tendons. So what exactly are the semis hagidin? Rabba Amar Rav Ashi de Agarma Ulavar. They are the tendons that are on the outside of the bone. There's the tendons that are on the outside of the bone. Rav Baravuna, Amar Rav Ashi, the agam of legam. They're actually the ones that are on the inside of the bone. Now, what do we mean when we say the outside of the bone and the inside? We don't mean inside as in they're inside the bone. What we mean is, in other words, like this. Rashi explains, you have like this tendons. What are they? They attach muscles to bones. So when these tendons, Rashi describes, when they leave the bone, when they separate from the bone and start going through and then start going into the muscles over there. So you have a period over there. You have an area over there where they run directly on the bone. where they, you have an area where they run directly on the bone. That's the agarim of a gav. That's where, from the, on the bone on the inside, where they run directly on the bone. And then you have a place where they fan out from there, where they spread out from there, and start attaching to the muscles. That's an agarim of a gav. So Rav Ashi is saying
on the bone, it's what agarim.
So agarim of a bar would be where it would be where it's already off, where it's already off the bone. Agarim al-gav would be where it's directly on the bone. On the bone.
No, on the bone it's what?
Agarim al-gav? Okay, agarim al-bar would mean when it's already off the bone. Here, let's see some pictures over here. Let's see some pictures over here. Well, yeah, I mean, you actually have a few opinions of Rishonim as well, also, but how to explain it exactly? But let's start with some pictures that define it as Rashi says it. So you have like this: there's an area where they run on the bone that's called agarma on the bone. Agarma means on the bone. Or the bar, and then you have an area where it's above that, where they're not running directly on the bone; they're running in the muscles, but they're still fairly attached together. Eventually, they eventually go to the muscles and fan out over there in the muscles themselves, and then they're not visible as tendons anymore.
This close to the bone,
agarma means on the bone,
and obar.
Well, obar means an outside. In other words, the area distant from the bone. That's what Rav Ashi is saying. It means that.
Corresponds to like distal versus.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it would correspond to distal versus whatever the opposite word. Yeah. Okay. So that's what Rav Ashi is saying. Rav Baravuna, Omer Rav Ashi, Da'agamim Olegav. The ones that are running, where it runs directly on the bone. By the way,
Rav Ashi's definition.
Because Rav Ashi mentioned Olebar when it's off the bone already. Yes. Rav Baravuna's definition is when it's specifically on the bone. Now, again, this is all according to Rav Ashi. You have a number of other explanations. You have a number of other explanations. What exactly it means.
One says it's away from the bone.
So one says it's when
it's tahidim.
Yeah.
And the other one says
when
it's on
only when it's on the bone.
Very close to the bone.
Right.
Okay.
And it comes out also according to Rashi, it means that there's two different definitions. What Rav Ashi says is the same as tahidim. Rav Baravuna would say is not, and vice versa. According to the Rosh, rather what it is Rav Baravuna is adding to Rav Ashi not only the part that's above the bones, but also the part that's on the bones.
Okay.
We have to, by the way, talk in this connection, which actual tendons do we mean? Rashi learns, and most of the Rishonim follow Rashi in this, that we're talking about tendons that run along the back of the leg. They have fancy names in English, but whatever. There's several. According to Rashi, on the face of it, it comes out that these are the same as Hagidim. Now, the Ravid points out a problem with that because the whole point of Tzomis is it's supposed to be a junction of them. Here it's not a junction. You have some of it on this bone over here and some of it over here.
Right.
So therefore, the Ravid prefers an explanation. He says that the Tzomis Hagidin actually run along the front of the leg. And you have over here, there's also a couple of tendons over here. For that and for a few other reasons, the Ravid prefers an explanation that the Tzomis Hagidin are actually a couple of tendons that run along the front of the leg. Fine, but which one is the one that we're talking about over here that's vital for the health of the life of the animal? According to Rashi, it's the ones on the back of the leg. According to the Ravid, it's the ones on the front of the leg. And actually, those actually have a band of cartilage that holds them together. So that's another reason to think of them as Tzomis Hagidin, because there's actually something holding them together, this cartilage.
Tzomis Hagidin should mean the
Tzomis Hagidin should mean
probably the veins and arteries
together. Gidin over here means tendons.
Only.
But does it mean the tendons on the back of the leg, or does it mean the tendons on the front of the leg? The Rashi and most Rishonim say the back. The Ravid says the front. The Rosh says the fact of the matter is that even if the Ravid does have questions on Rashi, the fact is he says that Rashi's explanation goes back a long way. It's not original to Rashi. It goes back to the time of the Gaonim and further. So therefore, yes, the Ravid has logical reasons to argue his point, but nevertheless, the Ravid says the front of the leg.
Like who?
What do you mean, like who? The Ravid says that that's what the Gemara means. The Rambam doesn't. The Rambam, I don't think spells out. I believe, to the extent that he spells it out, I think he says like Rashi that it means on the back. But I don't think he says so in so many words.
The Ravid says the front.
Rashi and most other Rishonim say the back. So in Shulchan Aruch it says you should be machmir like both, just to be on the safe side. But in general, but in principle, the halacha is like Rashi,
which is a bat.
Which is a bat. There is an opinion. There are some achronim who want to reinterpret Rashi and say that maybe actually what Rashi means is not this and then these, which after all are not really bound together, but rather Rashi means all by itself the Achilles tendon, which itself is made up of a couple of smaller tendons. Mm. So therefore,
it's
a tendon that breaks up into a few. The Gemara is going to point out soon that you have other examples like that where one tendon breaks up into more.
Exactly.
Fine. So then there's but that's the point. In other words, here it's actually comprised of three tendons joined together. In other words, each one eventually spreads out and is associated with its own muscle. Yeah. So you have each, eventually, as it goes further away, each, the different branches of it branch out to different muscles, but there's a point when they're all together as one tendon. So there's an argument made that that's maybe what Rashi meant. And therefore, that would explain the Raivad, that would answer the Raivad's objection, because they are, in fact, bound together over here. Okay.
But you have many parts of the leg where you have different tendons.
But only the tendons. Fine, but only the tendons over here in this area are the ones we're concerned about. Mm-hmm. All the rest of them are not considered so vital for the life of the animal.
Mm-hmm. So the halacha is what?
Like? So the halacha in principle is like Rashi, that the usual explanation of Rashi, that it means one over here and two over here.
One over here and two over here.
Just the right above the here is the joint that we're talking about over here. You have one tendon, you have the Achilles tendon over here, and you have two other tendons that run over here.
The Achilles is straight in the middle.
It's over here. This.
That's Rishon from. No, on this one. That's Rishon behind. Where is the Senate Agudin? On the view from behind.
Here's the part of the leg that was. Fine. This is one, two, three. Yeah. Okay, if you want, you can look at it here. So here's a different side. Fine. Viewed from the side that faces the front of the animal, then you have the ones at the right. Here's the ones that the Raivad identifies, because they're all on the front of the leg. According to Rashi, they would be around on the back. So here you have you're seeing from the side of the animal. If you want to see from the back, then here.
This part is from the back, and this part is lateral, isn't it?
No. You're looking at here the same view as you have over here. This is the leg coming down from the body of the animal. This is the back side of the leg. This is the front side of the leg.
Okay.
So Rashi would say the same as I given is this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
You have some Rishonim who understand that Rashi would mean it's just this. And the Raivad holds it's a couple of tendons over here.
Let me see close.
Okay, you know what? Why don't we continue with the Gemara and afterwards you can look. So we have so far again. We have Rav Ashi saying
Rashi says here basically.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, so let's go back to the Gemara. Rabba Omer Rav Ashi da Agam of Olivar. Rabba says in the name of Rav Ashi that it means the ones that are directly on the bone. Rabba Barav Huna, or directly off the bone, rather. Rabba Barav Huna Omer Rav Ashi da Agam of Olagav. It's instead, or in addition, also the ones that are where it runs on the bone. Rabba Breder, Rabba Barav Huna Omer da Arkuma Gufa. It means where the tendons are on the arcum. The arcum is a small bone in this joint over here that sticks out over here. In English, it's called the hock. So he says that the Tzemes HaGidin is where it runs on that. Yosef Ahumen Abanon Kamei Rav Abba, one of the Chachamim was sitting in front of Rav Abba, but Yosef Bekarmar, he was saying this last statement, Arkum Agufa, that the Tzemes HaGidin is where it runs on the arcum, on that bone that sticks out. So Rav Abba says to the other Talmidim, don't listen to what he's saying. Rather, the proper place, what is considered the Tzemes HaGidin, is the place where the butchers open it up. So Rashi gives two explanations of that. One is that you have the place where when they're doing nikur, when they're taking out the veins and whatever that they need to get rid of, they start with an area over here. They start with the gidin and other such things that are above the arkum, that hawk over there. So therefore it would be that, not what he's saying. Another explanation Rashi says is that the area where they start stripping off the skin of the legs. And the Raivad says a third explanation in keeping with his opinion, that it's a place where they make a hole in the leg and put a hook in there in order to hang the animal. In order to strip off the skin and cut it open and whatever. Okay. So that's the area where the Tzemach HaGidim is. V'hainu Rava b'rei d'Rava bar Avuna. That agrees with the version that Rava said, that Rava the son of Rava bar Avuna has said, that it's the Ilovei Arkuma. It's not the Gidim that are attached to the hawk itself, but rather above the hawk, just above it. So that's the point. In other words, this Hahume Rabbanan wanted to say that it's over here. And Rabbi Abba is telling them that no, it means over here, this area over here.
So
this area over here is Hecha the Tari Tavshi. This is according to Rashi's explanation, it would be Milafar because it's off the bones already.
Right.
Yeah.
Gav
means inside. It means inside. Yeah. Okay. Fine. More definitions. Amar of Asi, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. The Tzemach HaGidim that we're talking about is Makom Shagidim Tzemtzim, is the place where the Gidim are attached together and look like one and look like one tendon. So here is also part of the idea, maybe why we can use that new explanation of Rashi that he means this over here, because they really do look like one tendon at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Only Makom Shetzemtzim and Makom Shemispashtin, and it also runs from where they're connected together like that until they start spreading apart. All of that is considered the same as HaGidim. Yes. Vakama, how far upward is that? Amar Abaya, arba batzi b'torah. When it comes to an ox, which is a large animal, it means the length of it is 4 batzi. Rashi explains that batzi, we had actually earlier in the Masechta also, in Perek Eilat Reisus, we have this expression also. Rashi over there, and also over here, explains that basdi means an espa. So therefore, arba basdi, Rashi translates as 4 esbos. Well, not 4 esbos as in the palm of a hand. Esbos usually for this purpose means thumb. Well, it's 4 thumbs. It's slightly wider. The thumb is slightly wider. Okay, but there's still a difference. Okay, whatever. The point still remains that, the Rambam over there understood basdi to be 4 esbois, and therefore over here he understands arba basdi to be 16 esbois. So which would be much larger, of course. Okay. What about 16 esbois? Putting it in actual terms of Allah. According to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, an espa is 2 centimeters. An espa is about is 2 centimeters, about 3/4 of an inch. So therefore, according to him, 16 esbos would come out to 32 centimeters, would come out to about 10 or 11 inches.
11 only?
Yeah, about 10 or 11 inches. According to the Chazon Ish, an esba is about an inch. So according to him, 16 esbos would be 16 inches. Okay. Fine. The Dakamai, what about?
We'll have to go to the Bonsuit.
Okay. That's in a large animal. That's in a large animal, like a cow. How about in a smaller animal, like sheep or goats? How do you determine what's considered the same as a gideon? Amar Abaya. Abaya says you have to look at the actual. You have to look at the actual physical characteristics of them. Blitzy, where they're sticking out before they get absorbed into the muscles that they're attached to. Blitzy means they're sticking out. Havu Tzemach HaGidim, that's the area where it's considered Tzemach HaGidim. Blitzy, but where it gets absorbed into the muscle that the tendon is attached to, loy havu Tzemach HaGidim. At that point, it's not considered Tzemach HaGidim anymore, and if it got damaged, no problem. Also, where it's absorbed, yeah. Ashuni, loy havu Tzemach HaGidim, also where they're hard, is where they're considered Tzemach HaGidim. Rakichi, but when they soften, because when they go into the muscles,
so
you have an area where they're seen as tendons, and then you have afterwards they absorb. Afterwards, the end of the tendon goes up and inserts into the muscle, and there it softens. It becomes like muscular meat. So that's the point. Where it's hard.
So
shini ashuni means hard. Rakichi means soft.
Right, so
close to the bones and whatever, and then shortly above them is still hard. Afterwards it's all.
All right.
Also, alimi have a tzemach HaGidim. Also, only where they're thick are they tzemach HaGidim. Kini, but where they're thin, loy have a tzemach HaGidim. Then where they're thin, they're not considered tzemach HaGidim. Also, chivri have a tzemach HaGidim. Where they're white, they're considered tzemach HaGidim. Loy chivri, but where the point, where they're not white anymore, loy have a tzemach HaGidim. At that point, they're not tzemach HaGidim, and therefore, again, damage to them doesn't cause any problem.
When they're white, it's not tzemach
HaGidim. Then it is tzemach HaGidim. When they're not white, then it is. When they're white, it is tzemach HaGidim. When they're not white, then it's not. Mabravashi, Yama Mabravashi, is a little more machmir. Kibdezigi Apagabdalei Chati. He says that the part that's included in the Tzemes HaGidin is also when they're clear, even though they're not quite white yet, but they're not. They're like whitish. They're not reddish like muscle. They're not red like muscle tissue, but they're not white either. They're like clear, like halfway in between. He says that would still be considered Tzemes HaGidin. Now, Halacha is not like that. Tosis actually discusses whether the halacha would be like him, but Tosis brings two different gyusos, but whatever. Apparently, either way, it comes out that the halacha is not like him.
Okay. In a human, what's considered tzemes hagidim?
The tendon by the ankle, so it would include the Achilles tendon,
close
and maybe the
bone.
I don't know. I mean, in a person, it's not really negate. Okay.
No,
but I guess also. You also have, fine, same idea. In other words, you have the tendons over there by the joint, and then after that, they insert into the muscle. So,
what
after, so I don't know. We're talking about a couple of inches above the ankle, I guess. Okay. For this purpose, there are three threads, meaning three tendons that we're concerned with. One is thick, the other two are thin. Therefore, if thick, alima, so now what happens is...
There's three tendons,
and he's not saying something that anybody disagrees with. Everybody agrees with this concept that there are three. He's explaining the structure of them. You have one thick and two thin. Therefore, if thick alima, if the thick one gets cut, then you have a problem as the roiv binyan, because now most of the structure is gone, because the thick one is more than twice as thick as the two is thicker than the two thin ones put together.
I have minyan over here.
Yeah, that's the next one. As the right binyan, if the kini, and on the other hand, if the thinner ones are broken, as the right binyan, then you have the opposite problem because two out of three are gone. So therefore, either way, it's true. Ma'abrav Ashi masni l'kula. Ma'abrav Ashi, on the other hand, learns that we should be makel, and here the halacha is like him. If thick alima, if the thick one is cut, ha'ikaroid binyan, then it's fine because you still have the majority of the number. Two out of three are still intact. If the tinny, and if the thin ones are cut, no problem. Because you still have most of the structure. Because the thicker one is thicker than the two thin ones put together.
So whether the two or the big one is cut,
then it's okay.
Kosher.
It's still kosher. Only if one's thick and one small. Yeah. If one thicker one or one thin was cut, or most of each one of them, then you're there. Then you'd have a problem. Okay. But on the other hand, when it comes to birds, there are 16 threads. There are 16 such tendons. And the pashtos, I guess by an animal, you have many other tendons around the leg also. But by an animal, we're saying only those three are significant. By birds, all of them are significant. And here you have a picture, for example, you can see that you have a whole bunch of them.
Right.
So does
that mean any one of them?
That's the point. Right. And therefore... And if even one of them is cut, then the bird is treifa. So the Gemara tells, I was once standing in front of my father, Rav Ashi, but I saw the kamei oifa. They brought him a bird to check for treifas. He checked and he could only find 15 tendons. But however, there was one tendon that looked a little different than the other ones. Nase, so he broke it in half. He realized that it's actually two tendons joined together. So he broke it where the joint takes place. But Ashkach Tre, he found that indeed there were two over there. So therefore, there's your 16. Lamaisa, the post can say,
he counted 16,
and then he realized one of them was twice as big. One was really two. We don't have the expertise to know which are the exact 16 that are relevant. So therefore, if there's any kind of damage in that area, then the bird may be treifa. Now, practically speaking, you can't check them while the bird is alive. But second of all, as usual with most treifas, you don't have to check unless there's a reisa. If you have reason to suspect that there's a problem. So actually, nowadays, many of the poskim say that there is already a mir tamotzui of problems in them, because especially nowadays when they raise chickens and turkeys and they feed them and they become very heavy, there's a lot of strain on their legs. So therefore, any of the gidin over there, any of these tendons can easily be damaged. So therefore, many poskim nowadays say that you actually do have to regularly check them the same way as you would check the lungs or whatever or other such problem. But be that as it may, anyway, the point is, when we buy chicken in the store, The lowest part of the leg, they don't sell. They sell sometimes in the store. You'll find they sell chicken feet, like people using soup or whatever. But ordinarily, for eating, the drumstick that they sell is actually the upper part of the leg. It's the bottom end of it is where the same as I give you are. So if you find, when you buy chicken in the store, you find there's a problem over there. So it depends. Many times it'll be something that only developed after the shita. Then you don't have a problem. But if there's any reason to suspect that it happened while the bird was alive, for example, if you see signs of healing or whatever, then you have to ask the shayla, because it may be that the same as I give in word question before the straight man.
Why does the Gemara bring a story that the one time was the bird was 16 tenants? Is it trying to make the precedent?
It's trying to show us that you need to know what the 16 are. Just because you don't find 16 doesn't mean that there aren't 16 yet.
Okay.
Continues the Gemara. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rav, same as I give in Shomru Berubai. This that we're talking about, the Simon Sagidian, it has to be the majority. My Rubai, what do we mean the majority? That's the majority. What do we mean if the majority is damaged? Well, that was one opinion. Now we're going to have a different opinion. Roiv Echad Mehen. It means even if the majority of any one of those tendons, of the three tendons in an animal, was cut, then the animal was changed.
So it's the opposite opinion as before.
Yeah. Ki Amrita Kameh Deshmol. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told this over to Shmuel, because Rabbi Yehuda had first learned by Rav, and then after Rav passed away, he learned by Shmuel. Amalei, so Shmuel says, why should it be today? Nechdi tzlos ahavu. After all, there are three tendons over there. Ki mifsit chad minayu legamri. Even if one of them is completely missing, hoyka today, then you still have two left. So why should it be today? If the majority of one is cut. Similar to what Ma'arav Rav actually was saying before. However, the Gemara says, time of the ikat tray. So the implication is that it's only good because you have two left. Holeka tray loy, which seems to imply if you don't even have two left, if let's say the two thin ones were cut, or one thick and one thin, it sounds like Shmuel would say tray. Upliga de Rabbanoi, in which case that report disagrees with how Rabbanoi learns. So Amar Rabbanoi, Amar Shmuel, because Rabbanoi says also in the name of Shmuel, same as Agidin, Afilo loy neshtayu ba'elaka chota sarbol, even if all there is left of the tendon is like a chota sarbol, which is a chot means a thread, sarbol is a cloak. So a thin thread, in other words, like a thin thread that's still intact, kshera, then it'll still be kosher. So therefore, Shmuel, according to the version we have over here, is saying that, so far we have Rav saying that if most of any one of them is cut, then it's no good. Shmuel is saying as long as you have most of them left, two of them left, then it's good. And Rabbi Noi is saying that Shmuel said, even if all of them are cut through, and not a little piece, but a little thread that's intact that runs straight through, yeah. Okay. The Ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes like this. My Rubai Roy Kalachabachod. That in Rav starts by saying that Rubai means not the Roy of one of the tendons, but Roy of each one of the three. And then that would mean, in other words, if Roy of one of them was cut. No, within the three tendons, if Roiv of one of them was cut, no problem. If Roiv of two of them was cut, no problem. But if Roiv of all three, if the majority within the tendon, if the majority of the thickness of the tendon was cut. Then, Kiyamrita Kameh to Shmuel, Amali. Then, Rabbi Yehuda says, when I said this to Shmuel, he said to me, Mechti Tlosa Havu, after all there are three, Ha'ika Tlosa, and in this case, if three of them have been cut the majority through, but you still have Kol Chad, you still have three, to Kol Chad V'Chad Masayale, because each one, as long as you have some part of it intact, some thickness of it intact, still helps the animal. And it's still, Ha'ika Tlosa, the Kol Chad V'Chad. So you have three, because you have each one. It's still there, some of it. And therefore, Messiah Leila Rabbi Noi, therefore that supports what Rabbi Noi says, not like in the first version where it contradicts him, but rather according to the second version that supports him. The Amr Rabbi Noi, Amr Shmuel, Tzemes HaGidnesha Amr Afilu Lanishtai Ba'al Kuchot HaSabok Sheira. And therefore, so that would be that. Therefore, Shmuel would be saying, and Rabbi Noi agrees with that, that even if you only have a little bit of the thickness of each one left, then it would still be kosher. The halacha, though, is not like Shmuel. In Dine Yisr Veheter, the halacha is like Rav. And therefore, what it means is, the halacha is like Rav over here. So with also what Ma'abar Rav Ashi said, if you have only one of them or is cut through, then you're still okay, even if the one is the thick one, because you still have the two thin ones. But if you have the majority of each one of them is cut through, then already it's three.
And if you have the majority, there, two.
So which two? If it's the thin one,
and
if it's the two thin ones, no problem. You're going to cut through completely. It would be kosher because you still have the thick one. And if it was the thick one cut through, same thing. Only if it was, if you had the thick one and one of the thin ones was cut through, yeah, then you'd have a problem. But Rav is also telling us if the majority of each of the three of them was cut through, then it's also no good.
Not even a majority of two men.
No, because then you still have. Then you still have one whole one, and you still have enough of the other ones.
Now, let me ask you a question. Functionally, when you have two that are, the majority of two are cut and one is whole, the leg cannot function properly.
That's fine. The leg
it doesn't matter.
That's fine. It's not the functioning of the leg itself that's not the important thing. That's what we said. The leg can be cut off at certain places, and I'll still be cautious. The problem is the tzemach hagidin. The problem is the tzemach hagidin itself. Those tendons are considered to be vital to the health of the animal. Now, you ask any doctor nowadays or any veterinarian, they'll say it's not. However, again, the fact halacha is halacha, the fact that modern medicine says differently makes no difference. All right, so then we, I guess we'll stop over here. Okay.